Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. President Trump sat down with Sean Hannity last night, talk a little bit about the raid and all the fallout since. But before we get to that, I thought, and as a lead-in to it, This was a fun exchange between Josh Hawley and a woman named Colleen Shogan, who is a Yale PhD. She's a nominee to the National U.S. Archives. So, thus the relevance, the lead into Trump. A good example of the politicization and weaponization, to use a what has become a bit of an anodyne description of the federal government, but it doesn't make it untrue. The complete politicization and weaponization of these agencies by the left against the right, starting with Donald Trump. In real time. So Josh Hawley going through a paper that Colleen Shogan wrote. Thank you, Senator, for that question. Thank you, Senator, for that question. Listen to this exchange, and hopefully it starts to become clear just what one-dimensional, lobotomized, radical left activists you see populating the halls of power in this country, because she's been around for a while. She's being elevated by the Biden administration to be the nominee to run the National Archives, which, of course, is at the center of the Trump raid.
Republicans tend to exhibit anti-intellectual qualities. Democrats, on the other hand, coalesce on the intellectual tail of the continuum. So is the point that Republicans are stupid and Democrats are intellectual?
Yes, thank you, Senator, for that question. Absolutely not. The point of the article is that the presidents that I featured in it have a rhetorical connection with the American people.
A rhetorical connection that you say is anti-intellectual, and you feature every two-term Republican president, going back to Dwight Eisenhower.
Yes, Senator, I think it's a piece on rhetoric, and it is really looking at how these presidents have been successful rhetorically in their arguments.
Interesting. It's a piece on rhetoric, but you attribute part of the anti-intellectualism of the Republican Party to, in your words, the rise of the religious right. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. Is it because those voters are stupid?
Thank you, Senator, for that question. Absolutely not.
Oh.
And if I am confirmed as Archivist of the United States, I look forward to welcoming all Americans to the National Archives.
So do you think that people who voted for Donald Trump are anti-intellectual?
Thank you, Senator. I would not make any judgment on the people who voted for President Trump or any other president.
So you don't think the people who voted for Dwight Eisenhower or Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush, they weren't anti-intellectual? The anti-intellectual rhetoric just appealed to them because what? What's your theory?
Thank you, Senator, for that question. As I said, presidents are able to speak in common sense, plain terms to Americans that they understand.
So you characterize President Reagan as having, quote, less than impressive intellectual capacities. You said President Eisenhower and Bush were decidedly intellectual. You said Reagan engaged in intellectual posturing. Let's just start with the first one. Less than impressive intellectual capacities. So in other words, it's dumb.
Thank you, Senator. Absolutely not. That was a perception, and it was cited.
I'm sorry. It's a perception by whom? By you? You wrote about it.
No, Senator. That was, and as I said in the article, that is a perception, but actually in the article, because
you say Reagan's less than impressive intellectual capacities have been widely discussed. Mm-hmm. That's presented as a factual statement. Mm-hmm. You don't even cite for it. Mm-hmm. This is on page 298. I have your article. Don't dissemble in front of me. Mm-hmm. So Reagan's less than impressive intellectual capacities have been widely discussed. Mm-hmm. You're not saying that he had less than, that's not your view?
Thank you, Senator. It is not my view.
Why did you write it?
Thank you, Senator. That is not my view. My view was focused on his rhetorical capability.
That's not what your sentence says. Listen, you wrote an article saying basically that Republican voters are stupid, that Republican presidents deliberately appeal to anti-intellectualism. You rolled it all up in this thing called Republican populism, yet you're trying to present yourself here as a nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. In fact, you're an extreme partisan, and your record shows that. You're someone who has denigrated Republican presidents, every two-term Republican president, I think, I hope I'm not leaving anybody out, that has, since the Second World War, and their voters, in this lengthy article. I mean, I just don't understand. If you wrote it, why won't you stand behind it?
Thank you, Senator. I will stand by my long experience, over 15 years of nonpartisan service.
You know, this is not just a theoretical set of questions, because as you know, we have seen what happens when you have political activists in the position that you are up for confirmation for. And we are living through that as a nation right now.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text. And you don't get an appreciation, and you'll probably hear the extent of that clip nowhere but here in terms of the time devoted to it. But you have to understand how these people operate, how purposeful it is, how programmatic it is, and how important it is, because even something that is otherwise arcane, you know, tell me your favorite U.S. national archivist in American history, right? Nobody could name one, and that's okay. You shouldn't be able to. But now you have to pay attention to who the head of the National Archives is because of what you've seen occur over the last, well, it was obviously happening for months, but then it was the back and forth between the Trump camp and the National Archivist brings in the Department of Justice and precipitates that raid. That's why it's important. And it's important to understand the left place importance on who the U.S. National Archivist is. They don't leave any perch of power
unattended.
Exactly.
Yep.
Hey,
I never knew they had so much power until the Trump raid in August. I had no clue.
Let's get our people in everywhere. There's nothing to say that we won't need the National Archivist someday. Very instructive. So that's just a good setup for what we'll now build upon at 538.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. All right, so we set it up with the Hawley exchange. Josh Hawley, Senator Hawley from Missouri, has exchanged with Colleen Shogan, Biden nominee for National Archivist.
Yes, Senator. Yes, Senator. Thank you for the question, Senator.
I mean, it's could it be gross. Any more disingenuous?
Sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit.
Right. It's they're parodies of themselves, but they present themselves as caricatures for a purpose. Don't be fooled. Former President Trump on with Sean Hannity last night for an extended interview now that he's back at home having to clean up the place.
Yeah.
Hannity,
you know that they rifled through Barron's room too? How dare they?
But I continue to say, you know, Barron's at the center of this whole thing. He's running the whole show. It's been that way from the beginning. You know, always be wary of the quiet guy.
Okay. He's so tall too. He's like 6'8" now.
And the 6'10" quiet guy.
6'10"?
Or whatever. Yeah, he's tall.
He's 16 years old. Or 17. No.
Trump on Hannity talking about, you know, these federal agencies that continue to target his existence.
You had a lot of people. They wouldn't let anyone inside. And, you know, if you look at NARA and if you look at the FBI over the last 10, 15 years, and if you look at all of the things at the Justice Department, what's taken place, when you look at what took place with the Russia hoax, Sean, they spied on my campaign. What could be worse? Could you imagine, take Obama, if we spied on his campaign, it would probably be death sentence. They spied on my campaign even when I was in the White House, and who would think that this is possible? But they spied. So, you know, we're not dealing with a lot of trust here, and the public isn't either. The American public is really angry.
So then 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro. Text line. Trump also characterized this notion that was being bandied about this week that he could potentially be prosecuted for the improper maintenance of classified documents.
The word prosecute, I don't think this is prosecutable. Under the Presidential Records Act, there's no retribution or prosecution. You're supposed to negotiate. We're talking about documents. We're talking about documents that actually are being watched over to a certain extent, and I would say to a large extent by the Secret Service, if you think about it. But I can't imagine the word. You mentioned the word prosecution. I don't hear the word prosecution.
No, I'm saying.
And again, the question that is particularly operative because it could be dispositive of the whole issue is, did he declassify all the documents that were at Mar-a-Lago? Did he formally declassify everything that was in his possession, which basically, according to the Presidential Records Act and the power the president has with respect to classifying and declassifying information, is within his purview as long as he's president. Here's what he said to that.
You did declassify.
I did declassify, yes.
Okay. Is there a process? What was your process to declassify?
It doesn't have to be a process, as I understand it. You know, there's different people say different things, but as I understand it, there doesn't have to be. If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified, even by thinking about it, because you're sending it to Mar-a-Lago or to wherever you're sending it. And there doesn't have to be a process. There can be a process, but there doesn't have to be. You're the president. You make that decision. So when you send it, it's declassified. I declassified everything.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. I feel so bad for President Trump because they're getting him at a federal level. Yesterday they announced the civil lawsuit from the New York Attorney General suing President Trump. And doesn't stop. I mean, two separate issues.
Right, and we'll get to Letitia James, but just because, you know, Trump's imprecision with language, let's address that.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a process. There doesn't have to be a formal process, a committee, and so on and so forth. I think that's right. You don't have to, you can just think about declassifying. Well, no, you can't, people can't read your mind. There has to be an utterance. And again, I go back to Kash Patel, former chief of staff at the Pentagon, who said that Trump declassified information in his presence. I don't know if that's exhaustive of the information that was held at Mar-a-Lago or not, but you just heard him say, I declassified everything, and that you would take to mean he declassified everything that was in his possession. Now, I suppose that would have to be documented, substantiated by people who he expressed that to. But that seems to me really important. That's what this whole case, if it's really about this narrow issue of record keeping, which I don't think it is, but on the face of it, that's what the federal government is saying it is. That's what the Department of Justice is saying it is. So we have to start with what they're alleging and the evidence to support what they're alleging. And so I would like to see that developed a little bit more. And I would like the Trump lawyers to document that a little bit more clearly, because
they haven't yet.
It would put him in a very strong position if there are people that will sign affidavits saying, in my presence, President Trump declared that this cache of documents was declassified and that cache of documents was declassified, like Kash Patel has in the media, and so forth. Right? Corey in Woodlawn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan and Amy. I feel so sorry for President Trump. It's like day one when he got in there, they tried their best to get him out of there. But every scam after scam, individuals ran for office trying to violate their oaths to try to get this guy out. Even Pritzker ran, not against Rana, but against Trump. They all ran trying to get this guy out of office, and they're succeeding. And if this goes completely through, I mean, I'm losing faith quickly in this country's ability to be even-handed. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Corey. Clay in Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Real quick, just to start off, I don't know if you guys heard, they left one illegal immigrant at Martha's Vineyard. It was a gay African-American male married to a transgender woman. He had a fake birth certificate from Hawaii. Kind of weird. His name was Barry Totoro.
Okay. All right.
All right. All right. I'll ease off. I yield. How scared these people must be. How terrified these people are. I mean, finally, it feels good to be a conservative. We have these people scared. If anything, I am more empowered now than ever. I feel more proud to call myself conservative. Good. Let these people squirm. Let these people come out of their little holes, and I say we continue on the offensive here. That's my thoughts.
Thanks for the call, Clay. And again, is the classification system, classification, declassified, classified, is that system enforced by criminal law? Here's the New York Times on it. Largely not. For the most part, the classification system is about bureaucratic controls. The main punishment for disobedience is administrative. Officials can be admonished, lose their security clearance, and be fired. You know, the president's power to classify and declassify has developed over the course of our nation's history through executive orders. But there are, of course, separate criminal penalties Congress has imposed to protect security secrets. And this is what has been invoked in the search warrant, the Espionage Act, and so on and so forth.
Well, what's the process of declassifying something? Can you just make a bold statement? I'm declassifying these? Well, and then, or do they have to stamp it? Or
yes, you can.
Most of us don't know the process.
You just said it doesn't need to be a process. It's discretionary.
Okay.
For the president, generally speaking.
Then his lawyers should come forward, and as you said, get the affidavit from Kash Patel, and present that.
And so that doesn't necessarily end the discussion about violations of the Espionage Act of 1917 and so forth, but it certainly undermines the credibility of the federal government. The justification for the raid, as if that needed to be undermined further, and the strength of their case, the propriety of the discretion they have exercised here. This is why, you know, more in substantiation of what the president said on Hannity last night would be better than less. Craig in Mount Greenwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Dan, it doesn't matter what one bit, what's right or wrong or what's declassified or what's not declassified, because what we're up against and what Trump and his family are up against is an absolute out of control and unjust and way above the law group. And it's worse than a banana republic because of this. Our country, basically, half the people don't even realize what's going on or the level of it. In a banana republic, they all know they're up against a corrupt government, and it's them against their government. Here, we've got too many stupid people in Republicans that are too stupid, that are basically in high places going along with it all. So where we go from here is hard to say.
Thanks for the call, Craig. You know, and again, the contrasts here in terms of the standards. The Obama administration told the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, they were going to upload documents that the Obamas took from the White House into a digital form for use in the Obama library. The paper documents are held at a warehouse in Hoffman Estates, and they were to be held there while the digitization process took place.
Right.
But they've never digitized the records.
Right. Obama lied, said that he was going to get on that.
Yeah.
They didn't go after him with the heat of a thousand suns.
In a letter to NARA, the Obama Foundation agrees to transfer up to $3,300,000 to the National Archives Trust Fund to support the move of classified and unclassified. What? To support the move of classified and unclassified Obama presidential records and artifacts from Hoffman Estates to NARA-controlled facilities that conform to the agency's archival storage standards for such records and artifacts, and so on and so forth. Classified and unclassified, held at a warehouse in Hoffman Estates.
Is that a secure location?
Classified and, you know, let's say there was classified and unclassified, held at a storage room in Mar-a-Lago that was adorned by a lock designated by the FBI.
Right, and it also had surveillance cameras on it, too.
Again, a running conversation between the federal government and Trump's attorneys on the matter of these documents. And again, this was a letter in 2018. Additional transfer, you know, talking about the transfers of money to support this process and so on and so forth. That was 2018. No digitization of the records has happened. And I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe there were any raids on the Hoffman Estates warehouse from the FBI to secure classified documents. I don't think
he's a Democrat, so they're going to leave him alone.
I don't think a criminal investigation was triggered for Obama's holding of these documents, particularly classified, while they were digitized. And again, they weren't digitized. Huh. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. Just wanted to give a little historical analog here and explain it a little bit with Trump and where I think this is going ultimately. In New Kingdom Egypt, which was 1600 BC to 1100 BC, the bureaucracy was extremely powerful. And the bureaucracy was basically religious. You had all these different temples and so forth with all these different gods. And there were a lot of priests and people associated with that who benefited off of that. Sounds a lot similar to our bureaucracy and our deep state and administrative state here. And there was a pharaoh, and this is not a perfect analog to Trump at all, but there was a pharaoh named Amenhotep III, which means Amun, the god, is pleased, Hotep. And he had a son, Amenhotep IV. Amun is pleased. That was one
like
of the
George
most
Foreman. Gods. Everybody was named Amenhotep. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Then Amenhotep IV, one of the reasons, I mean, he had some very bad qualities, okay, but he also wanted to
pharaohs
increase
his often
power.
Do. Yeah.
As they often do. He wanted to get rid of some of the power of the bureaucracy. And so what he did was he changed Egypt from a polytheistic society to essentially a monotheistic society. He moved it over to the capital, over to Tel El Amarna, and he said Aten is the god. And he changed his name to Akin Aten, which means essentially effective for Aten. That's who he's going with. The problem with all this is that's almost like Trump. He was trying to basically get rid of the power of the bureaucracy. Akin Aten was the father of King Tutankhamun, and Tutankhamun means Amun is, I forget exactly what it is, but basically they're going back to Amun. But he was originally named Tutankhaten, his son. So Tutankhamun, King Tut, was actually the boy king, was really Tutankhaten originally. And the reason that happened, the reason he changed his name back, was because the bureaucracy went and went after him and basically forced him to. Ultimately, he was probably murdered too. And, you know, that's where I think we're at with this. I think the bureaucracy is just so powerful, just like they were in ancient Egypt, that ultimately that bureaucracy is going to win, just as they did in New Kingdom Egypt. I'm sorry for that potentially boring historical analog, but
no, it's,
but,
I like
King Tut's story.
I like a deep dig. That was almost archaeological. That's yeah. How deep that was. So now that we allowed you to display your learnedness, I want you to do an impersonation of Steve Martin's King Tut routine.
I'm not even familiar with that.
You're not?
Oh,
you know,
what?
Come
no,
on.
How old are you?
You know, Steve, I'm 5'0", Dan. Same age as you know.
Yeah, so if I know it, he should know it. You obviously know, you know Steve Martin's oeuvre. So.
Yes, I do. I do. My favorite Steve Martin movie was Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where he's sitting there in the high chair.
Yeah.
He was the,
right.
That was with
Michael Caine. Yes, right.
You know, there's a new movie with Michael Caine. He's like 90. It's called Medieval. I was trying to look for a movie to watch at AMC. Still nothing. But Michael Caine is still out there.
I know he is.
89.
And
yeah,
a great.
So got to give him credit.
And a great, not to get too, you know, too off the beaten path here. But have you seen the Trip movies with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon?
No, I don't know those.
The Trip movies are excellent. Brydon and Coogan.
Brydon and Coogan.
Yeah, comedians. And Coogan's become a very successful actor, and also in dramatic roles. You know, he was awesome in Philomena with Judi Dench and Steve Coogan.
Do
we know this?
I know the movie.
Yeah.
I know the movie. I haven't watched it. I haven't seen that one, though.
I really need to give up politics and just be the next Roger Ebert. But anyway,
well, we should
I digress.
Set up a Siskel and Ebert show. That's what we ought to do.
Yeah, but
take care.
You're gonna have to tamp down some of the references to, the Egyptian pharaohs. Where was it? Oh, no, Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon.
Okay.
The first Trip movie, which is the best of, I think there's three. They do this back and forth they do about who has the better Michael Caine impersonation. You will so appreciate just that sort of running gag throughout the trip is them competing with each other to see who does the best Michael Caine. It's very good, Frank.
Well, my hero was Phil Hartman. That's the guy who I guess.
Well, Phil Hartman's a genius. Phil Hartman's a genius.
Was.
Thanks for the
now
call.
He's gone.
You know, an underrated show.
What?
By the way, favorite Steve Martin routine or favorite Steve Martin movie, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I'm a little bit, most people would maybe say The Jerk. Some people who don't know anything would say Father of the Bride.
Okay, easy.
Best Steve Martin movie?
What one?
Man with Two Brains? No. The Lonely Guy. Him and Charles Grodin.
Oh.
I mean, they're just so good. Like, it's a sort of like Brydon and Coogan. Yeah. But anyway, I digress. Before we go down this rabbit hole any further, let's pull back out.
Okay.
Let's dig ourselves back out. And also,
cut to Steve Martin. Let's go.
Let's also mention this civil suit that New York State Attorney General Letitia James announced.
Yeah, because she's filed the civil suit, which I thought was strange. Because remember when she campaigned? When she was out campaigning, she had mentioned that she was going to sue Trump. That was part of her platform.
Will you sue him for us?
Oh, we're going to definitely sue him. We're going to be a real pain in the ass.
She could, the one lady say, are you going to sue him for us? Like, oh, we're going to get him. So that's what she did yesterday. Trump and his three oldest children, they're accusing them of 200 cases of fraud. They allege that they manipulated the value of their assets to secure favorable bank loans.
3 years, and this is what you come up with.
Claiming you have money that you do not have does not amount to the art of the deal. It's the art of the steal.
Oh, boy.
Oh, she went on.
Passion of fraud and deception that was used by Mr. Trump and the Trump Organization for their own financial benefit is astounding.
Art of the deal, art of the steal. I'm sure they were workshopping that line for months, almost probably as long as the investigation was ongoing. That's a law enforcement officer. That's what a law enforcement official says.
Trump replied that it's a witch hunt by a racist AG.
Here's the deal. Bill Barr, who is not one to hold his tongue, including in the direction of Trump. He's happy to be critical of Trump where he disagrees. Here's what Barr said about this suit yesterday.
It's hard for me not to conclude it's a political hit job. And this is a woman who campaigned for office saying that promising she was going to go after Trump, which I think is a tremendous abuse of office to go headhunting and targeting individuals. So I think she was targeting Trump. And this is after 3 years, a civil lawsuit, the gist of which is that when the Trump Organization borrowed money, Trump personally guaranteed those loans. And to support that, she's claiming that he inflated his assets on his financial statements. Now, I'm not even sure she has a good case against Trump himself, but what ultimately persuades me that this is a political hit job is she grossly overreaches when she tries to drag the children into this. Yes, they had roles in the business, but this was his personal financial statement. It was prepared by the CFO, accounting firms were involved in it. The children aren't going to know the details of that and be able, and nor are they expected in the real world to do their own due diligence and have it, you know, reviewed independently.
All right, the lawsuit seeks $250 million, but listen to this. It blocks him from running businesses in New York and from buying commercial real estate for 5 years.
So gross overreach. Well, everybody on the left is doing it, so why not Letitia James? Why not just pile on? And that's exactly what they're doing. And
she left Barron out of the lawsuit.
I would suggest, and Barr suggests as well, it's going to boomerang on her, as I think this raid is going to boomerang on and everything associated with is going to boomerang on the left. But, you know, we'll see. We only know a limited amount of things right now, but there's a lot of questions that the federal government is not answering and then their silence on some of these questions is more than a little curious.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and now come the trial lawyers.
Marching through, lining up.
Class action lawsuit has been filed on behalf of mostly Venezuelan migrants. Class action lawsuit against Florida, against the state of Florida, against Governor Ron DeSantis and other Florida officials, arguing that the conduct of flying them to Martha's Vineyard discriminates against them on the basis of alienage and deprives them of equal protection of the laws under the 14th Amendment. Florida officials have, quote, intentionally targeted only individuals who are non-white and born outside of the United States. Complaint alleges, and the complaint further alleges that Florida officials manufactured an official looking brochure using language from the Massachusetts Refugee Resettlement Program in order to buttress their false oral representations in furtherance of the conspiracy to deprive these migrants of their 14th Amendment equal protection rights. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I wonder what Democratic leader or insider with the Democratic Party or the DNC talked those people into doing this, pulled them aside and said, let's do this. You know, if your rights were violated. Because remember, people on the island didn't want them. Here's a local resident.
So, what are the most difficult challenges right now?
The difficult challenges are... we have, at some point in time, they have to move to somewhere else, right? We don't have the services to take care of 50 immigrants, and we certainly don't have housing. We're in a housing crisis as we are on this island, and so we can't house everyone here that lives here and works here. We don't have housing for 50 more people.
All right.
Step up, do your part, woman. It's just 50 people.
And then 12 hours later, there were the tearful goodbyes with Martha's supremacists and the migrants being told of the indelible mark they've made on the lives of the Martha supremacists, and they'll never be forgotten. Now get the hell out. Here's Marco Rubio on Fox yesterday after the announcement of the class action suit against DeSantis responding.
Well, think about this, okay? People came into this country illegally, violating our laws, okay? And the first thing they do is get lawyers and use our laws to sue an elected governor, to sue a state. I mean, just think about that. They just got here. They're not even here legally. They didn't enter the country the proper way. And they're immediately in court demanding rights and claims under our laws. This is outrageous. What other country in the world would that even be allowed? What other country in the world would even tolerate that? So I think this is, you know, we have a, this is not immigration, what we're seeing. Okay, this is mass migration. That's a very different thing. And but to think about the fact that somebody just came here illegally, and within a week they're in court and they have lawyers representing them in court, suing the American government that whose laws they just violated, is unbelievable. It's outrageous. It angers me, and it should anger everybody.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. That is so true. They came here illegally and they're using our laws to sue a governor. You got to find the money trail. Who's paying for this? Who's paying for their lawyers?
It's a contingency. Class action suit. I'm sure it's being done on contingency. They sue the state of Florida, deep pockets. See if you can, you know, extract your pounds of flesh monetarily. I'm talking about the class action attorneys using these migrants. There is, just to be clear, you do have access to the courts whether or not you're in this country illegally. There's a 2001 Supreme Court decision, Zavidas, in which I think it was Breyer who wrote the majority opinion, that regardless of alienage, the due process clause applies to all persons within the United States, including aliens, whether their presence is lawful or not. So just to be clear on the law and the Supreme Court jurisprudence on it, they do have the right to file a claim. The judiciousness of it is a whole nother matter. But, you know, when you're talking about judiciousness and trial lawyers, it's a difficult conversation. You know what I'm saying? Additional issue, I know this is getting a lot of attention, but the more important issue is border security generally. You know, all these gambits, this class action suit here, prosecute DeSantis and Abbott as human traffickers over there.
Yeah, asking the Merrick Garland, the DOJ to do it.
This is the sort of stuff. I mean, you know, again, I shouldn't dismiss it completely because of the politicization of federal law enforcement. So who knows what a Merrick Garland DOJ would be willing to do. So I don't dismiss it in its entirety, but I would suggest that this is about chyrons on cable news channels. This is not about, you know, the substance of the matter, which is border security. And a better exchange, in Marco Rubio's appearance yesterday with Bill Hemmer and Perino, was talking about the number of suspected terrorists that have been identified and apprehended at the border just this year, as compared to, say, the previous couple of years, particularly the last year of Trump, when I believe the number was zero. Well, now the number is 75X or 77X zero. Listen to this exchange. First Hemmer raising the issue and then Rubio responding.
Yeah, we just found out in the month of August alone, 12 arrests were made on the FBI's terrorist watch list, which brings the total to 78 suspected terrorists arrested so far this year. That's three times the number of the last 5 years put together. I will remind you, as if you need to know this, that only 19 hijackers pulled off 9/11.
But the problem is that those are the ones we know about, okay? So most people that are crossing the border, they've all been coached. This is an industry. So they coach you up. These are the magic words you have to say. You turn yourself into a border agent. You say these magic words. You'll be released, by the way, with a fake address. No one's talking about that. DHS is now giving people, migrants, if they don't have an address, they give them a fake address in the United States. But people are turning themselves in. If you know you're a terrorist, you're not turning yourself in. So of the 78 is but a small sliver of what we suspect is a much broader group of people linked to groups in the Middle East of terrorism, but also terrorist groups in our hemisphere. The ELN and the FARC, two communist terrorist narco-trafficking organizations in Colombia, Venezuela region. There are people linked to that. In fact, I think that's the single largest group of terrorists that have been apprehended that have been sent here. And what we don't even know, and I think we need to be looking into it, there's been reports on this, is there a strategy here? Is Venezuela deliberately, or other countries deliberately sending people here that they believe will cause harm within the United States? We also don't know the answer to that, but there's some suspicion that that might be the case. None of this is going to be answered by this administration because they don't give, they don't care. They really, literally do not care.
You know, it's a good point that Marco Rubio raises about, you know, the Venezuelan communists emptying the jails and sending the worst of the worst to this country. I mean, that's what Castro did with the Mariel Boatlift. It's not like it hasn't been done before. Take advantage of the opportunity.
And they know, they're watching. You think in this lawsuit, you think people that are thinking about, wow, well, we have more power than we thought. We can get in there illegally and then we could sue the governor of Florida. Let's go. Pack your stuff up.
So suspected terrorists, 78. What did Bill have? Three times the number of the last 5 years combined. And then Rubio takes, you know, how orchestrated this is, how commoditized is the approach to taking advantage of the open borders disposition of this administration. Here we have another case, too. I just want to mention in passing, it was reported last week, but we were talking about this yesterday in the context of people who have lost a family member, who have suffered violent, being victimized by violent criminals, who should not be in this country. We can't even accomplish that. And the discussion from the left is all about pathway to citizenship. Why don't you keep the people out of this country who everyone agrees should not be in this country? Why don't you demonstrate you can do that one thing first? This Honduran illegal immigrant deported three times. Three times. He is now accused of terrorizing women and girls along a popular Virginia walking trail for months, suspected in a string of at least 21 separate assaults and sexual battery related incidents. Also wanted in connection to the attacking of a jogger in New York.
Oh, God.
Three times. And, you know, stuff. And there's other stuff, too, that's less sexy, but it's very real in terms of the impact on people's lives. Law-abiding Americans' lives. Story out of Eagle Pass. Eagle Pass, you know, the border community.
Right. We talked about them. Population 22,000. They had 50,000 invade their town in just July alone.
The owner of a small barbecue restaurant there, Selena Price, works alongside her father and has for the past two decades. First, they got shut down by COVID. Now they're being shut down by the illegal immigrants that are overrunning their community. From February to now, I've had five break-ins. Oh, not only has my business been broken into and ransacked, it's just the insecurity now. You don't feel safe at home anymore. Price said migrants arriving in Eagle Pass often look for shelter and supplies in vacant buildings. Her family restaurant, which had been shuttered since the height of COVID, was a frequent stop. Once they are processed, I see busloads daily. They're just released, and they find sanctuary in anything vacant or not. What I had that I valued, that not only had sentimental value but had actual monetary value, has depreciated thanks to this mess, the trash, and the vandalism. And now they're trying to sell their business. Good luck. Bob in Grays Lake.
Yeah, I've read so much on this stuff since yesterday. I believe it was Fox News stated that three of George Soros's backed super funds are funding these illegals in their suits against America.
Oh, like Soros funded public interest law firms doing it pro bono. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense too. Sure. I didn't see that, but that makes perfect sense. Thanks for the call, Bob.
Have a good one.
Appreciate it. Art in Woodstock.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Why couldn't we, as the American people, you're just calling out all these crimes that these illegals are committing here. Why can't we sue the Biden administration? I mean, why can't we have, like, an investigation into their communications behind the scenes? I mean, they've got to be talking about this. they've got it, that, you know, that there's no way that this, you know, these guys are liable. The Biden administration is liable for all these crimes that are being committed by these criminals that are crossing our borders illegally. Why can't we as American people have a class or investigation into, you know, the talking behind the scenes, I guess. I don't know how to say it. But,
yeah, yeah. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, yesterday we talked about some individuals that contacted a wealth manager from Wheaton who's featured in one of my Business Speaks commercials that my PAC is doing, the PAC I run is doing, in its involvement with the governor's race.
I love those testimonials. Tom Sudeikis in one. There's other people.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's effective.
Mentioned two people by name because they, because of the response, they contacted the family of the person featured in that ad, who's, again, a wealth manager from Wheaton, called his home, did one realtor from Lincoln Park named John Reuter, and an electrical contractor of some sort named Robert Schumacher from the Western Burbs, Villa Park, left nasty messages at his office and so forth. And then so we heard from both Schumacher and Reuter. Schumacher Facebooked me and said, "You'll be hearing from my attorney," to which I responded, "I can't wait, D-bag."
Okay.
Here's what Schumacher did, and this is straight from the source. Okay.
Okay.
This is where it stands. Message from the person who is being harassed by Schumacher. Robert Schumacher, electrical contractor. This is from my source, the guy who's featured in the ad. "We contacted the Wheaton police regarding the 6 unhinged messages from Robert Schumacher. They sent an officer to our office, and we played him all of the voicemails. The police are going to contact him, Schumacher. They are terming it harassment by telephone. They're going to tell him he cannot call us, come to our office, leave Google reviews, or have any other contact with us. If he violates this order, he will be arrested." Because the whole predicate of talking about this is the response you get from the left when you decide to
ad like that?
When you decide to speak out and just characterize the fiscal mismanagement of the state by Governor Pritzker, which is the substance of what Stephen DeFilippo had to say in the ad that we were running. This is the response. And so, you know,
so you have the voicemails he called 6 times and made threatening comments.
I've just read you what I have from the source. So that's that. And so the police are involved there. With respect to Reuter, you know, he contacted me as well via Instagram and went back and forth. Like, he was at first sort of like apologetic. I shouldn't have called his house. But then he said that he never said any of the things that the family is saying he said. Well, here's what the family is saying happened. My wife answered a call around 8:30 p.m. on Sunday, September 18th. He asked for me. My wife said, "He's not available. May I take a message?" He angrily said, "Tell him to get the blank off the television," and then he hung up. So, Reuter,
how did they get under their skin like that? What is wrong? This is mental illness.
You call somebody at home, and then you tell the wife to tell her husband, they don't know, he doesn't know these people, and to get that blank off television. I mean, who the blank are you, number one? And even though Reuter said, you know, "I shouldn't have called home," that's what he said to me in an Instagram message. And I have the messages.
Okay.
So I can substantiate everything I'm saying, which is normally the case, by the way. And it's not just, you know, kind of fact-free opinions like ubiquitous from the left. The problem is I have no reason to believe him when he says, "I didn't use profanity. I wasn't angry," and blah, blah, blah. And then he went back and forth conflating that I said things about him that Schumacher is alleged to have done, as I read, and I didn't. So again, this is what is said about John Reuter, the real estate agent at Properties in Lincoln Park. And this is what's said from the source about Robert Schumacher, the electrical contractor from Villa Park. Why is this important? Why are these people important? They're not, except to the extent that they're good examples of the bad example. And we need to stand up for people who are getting harassed by people like them. By the way, he also received a call, I found out yesterday, from a Brian Zick, Z-Y-C-H, Brian Zick, with vulgar language, including calling him a pejorative name for a gay person. Because, you know, the left is so tolerant. Yeah. Contacted the Wheaton police. They're going to come today and listen to all the messages. Good. And they did. And then that's the whole, they're sending a message to Schumacher that what he's doing is harassment by telephone. And he better cease and desist or he'll be arrested.
File a restraining order against all of them. Jeez.
Chris and Carrie.
Hey, good morning, guys. I had an interesting exchange with both of them. I did say I spoke to John Reuter yesterday. I called and left a message. I was very civil. I was calm. I didn't scream. I'm just kind of questioning why, you know, kind of trying to point out the irony in what I was doing to what he did, but being much more civil about it. We did have a nice exchange. He did show contrition, like I think he did with you, Dan. He didn't really apologize, but he did initially say he never made a call, and then he admitted that he did make a call.
Right, here we go. Right, here we go.
When I tried to speak to Robert Schumacher, I called him pretty much after you released his name, and he picked up the phone, and I questioned him, and it just was F you, F you, F you, F you. That's the only response he could give. And then he called me this morning at 5:30 this morning and hung up. You know, as a, maybe a gotcha, like I'm going to wait, call you at 5:30.
Prank call you.
He didn't know that I wake up. He didn't know that I wake up at 4:30. So he didn't get me. And then he called back again. I called him back and left a message. Hey, let's talk about this. You know. And then he called back, called me back, and he's like, you know, hey, F face. You know, you're that. And,
yeah, so this
what with these people.
This is, you know, he's
there's
like
no civility.
Well, he's a Keith Olbermann arrested adolescent. That's what Robert Schumacher is, clearly, based on the conduct we're hearing. And you're not the only one. People who posted about it on social media, we've heard back too about Schumacher specifically. Here's what I think. I think Reuter is embarrassed by what he did. I think he let his whatever political ideology get the best of him. He admitted he was wrong to call the house, which he was.
But he
can't bring himself to admit what I think he said based on what my friend is saying. And I believe my friend. But he did the, like, you know, I have many conservative friends and all this stuff kind of thing that he said, you know. So I think Reuter is properly chastened. Schumacher seems like he's incorrigible, which is fine because now the police are involved. Thanks for the
Robert Schumacher changed his story. Okay.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. See Larry Elder, Brandon Tatum, Alex Berenson, and many more at Freedom Summit Chicago. Tickets available at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. As expected yesterday, the mystics at the Fed spiked interest rates 75 basis points. Another hike is expected before year's end as the Fed tries to get to their target of 2% to 2.25% inflation by by 2023. Not going to happen now. Maybe projected out to 2025. Do these predictions or projections even matter? No, not really. Does the Fed know what they're doing and how they can get from point A to point B? No, they really don't. It's sort of unknowable.
Now it's more expensive to have a car loan, credit card rates, everything goes up. Even gas prices, right on the corner, Dan, it jumped 52 cents a gallon.
Well, that's
because of yesterday's decision.
No, that's not. No,
well,
no.
Gas prices are up.
Yeah, well, gas prices are up, but it's a complicated set of variables that has little to do with interest rates. But the point is that all of this talk about what the Fed is doing to address the inflation issue and how they're going to navigate something approximating a soft landing is so much wishful thinking. And it start. I mean, you just remember that the Fed was off by a factor of 3 in their prediction of inflation for this fiscal year. And, you know, being off by a factor of 3 is pretty good for these government mystics, generally speaking. And now you have the market tanking, as you expect, because, well, one of the things that's happening is government debt is providing real yield. And so it's a much safer bet than the vagaries of the market. So you saw the Dow down, what, 500 points, and NASDAQ down 200 points yesterday. Mm-hmm. For more on all of this, the implications of what the Fed did, the what we can divine from what they're trying to do in terms of how we navigate the uncertainty as they're trying to navigate uncertainty. Pleased to be joined by Alex Pollack, senior fellow with the Mises Institute, served as the principal deputy director of the Office of Financial Research in the U.S. Treasury Department, former president and CEO, Federal Home Loan Bank of Chicago, and author of Finance and Philosophy, Why We're Always Surprised. Alex Pollack, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's good to be with you.
So the hike yesterday, as expected, and the number that had been built in. So, you know, everybody's working together to try to find where this soft landing is. How are they doing?
I think you're right that we the soft landing is very hard to find. Indeed, years ago, somebody described the Federal Reserve trying to navigate the economy with, while, as you said a minute ago, they really don't and can't know what's going to happen, like trying to land a 747 with your windshield blocked and all you have is equipment that tells you where you were 20 minutes ago. And it's something like that, only they're, of course, not as up-to-date as 20 minutes ago. I wrote a little piece last year called Pity the Poor Federal Open Market Committee Members, because they must know in their heart of hearts that they don't really know what they're doing, but they have to do it anyway. And we see that again. Interest rates are much higher than they were, but they're not high. Historically, interest rates are low still. And relative to the runaway Biden inflation, they're still very low. So what we call real interest rates, or interest rates adjusted for inflation, are still largely negative. But these rates are enough, as we see, to have big financial market effects and to have started the serious deflation of the everything bubble, as we call it, that the central banks puffed up. And now we're going in the other direction.
So if you were one of these poor souls on the Fed Open Markets Committee, what would you be arguing?
I've thought about that occasionally. It's highly unlikely that I would be. But if I would, I would say that it is impossible for the Open Market Committee or any other group of, I think you called them mystics or something a minute ago.
Yeah.
Let's say of would-be philosopher kings. They can't do what they set out to do, which is manage an economy. What they have to most do is get out of the way and let the enterprising, innovative economy and its financial system function.
Well, I agree. I agree with that. But here's where, you know, after a decade of quantitative easing, that's sort of been foreclosed as an option. So now, what do you do to get out of what you've been doing?
Right, and that is exactly what I was going to say. What you just said was my next sentence. After a decade of suppressing interest rates far below their natural levels, in some countries making them negative, in all countries making real interest rates negative, and now you're stuck. There is no easy way out. There is no way out without pain. You're either going to have a continuing, highly destructive runaway inflation, or you're going to have a big correction in financial markets and the economy. Once we're where we are, there is no pleasant way out. And I think that's why Chairman Powell is thinking so much about former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker these days, because he was in the same position where there was no easy way out. And they did stop
the
runaway inflation.
Yeah.
Well,
they,
a lot,
they didn't stop inflation, you know, but they stopped the runaway inflation. And but it it was an extremely severe recession that resulted. So there's no easy way out from here. So the poor FOMC members, indeed.
Well, a lot of hardworking Chicagoans just don't understand how raising interest rates will help lower inflation. I mean, if they did nothing, would inflation keep rising?
If they keep letting the government spend with very large deficits, which this government is doing, and keep financing that spending by printing money, yes, inflation will keep on and get worse. So the constant temptation always for politicians is to spend money because they want to give people money to get their votes. And how do you get that money? Well, we don't like raising taxes. Much easier just to print it up, which is what we have been doing now. And when you do that, unfortunately, you generate a high inflation. You generate, as the ancient and correct wisdom of economics goes, you create a surplus of money. Its value depreciates. When your money is, the value of your money is depreciating, the other way that you see that is that prices of goods and services are rising. First, we had a tremendous inflation in asset prices, which is now correcting, what we call the everything bubble. And then it came out in goods and services inflation. And you can't get out of that inflation without stopping the printing.
And
what they're trying to do now.
Right. And here's something else that politicians know. Rather than a shock to the system, especially from the left, what they know is we can slow bleed this. We're really not trying to correct the problem in the short term or reverse course in the short term. We're just trying to sort of slow bleed it. So we'll have marginally negative growth to anemic growth. We'll have a high inflation environment. We'll have, environmental leftist inspired green stagflation for years to come. But if you slow bleed it, things tick up a little bit, things tick down a little bit, then people learn to cope rather than, sort of a crash like you had in 2008 where, you generate a real existential crisis for your government or for your standing as a politician.
Yes, everybody, of course, wants to avoid crashes, and we hope to do that. The fix to the crisis is LIBOR, as it was in 2008 and again in 2020 and in other times, is to have a lot more intervention and a lot more printing to get you past the crisis. And the problem is, as I know very well, Dave and Amy, the most fundamental law of economics is that nothing is free. And everything that you do in the way of the central bank and the government, and of course the central bank is just part of the government, has a cost. If you do a lot of monetary expansion to try to get past the next election, you're going to live with a cost later, just high inflation or stagflation, and that's what we're seeing now, unfortunately. But they sowed the wind and now they're reaping the whirlwind.
Well, so what I hear you saying is stay long Florida real estate, which is exactly what I'm going to do. Alex Pollack, senior fellow with the Mises Institute, former principal deputy director of the Office of Financial Research at the U.S. Treasury, former president and CEO of Federal Home Loan Bank, and the author of Finance and Philosophy, Why We're Always Surprised. Alex, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
It's Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So this little contretemps between Nikki Haley and the man-hating shrews on The View. The man-hating shrews on The View were having one of their mind-numbingly dull conversations about politics. This is on the 2024 election and the prospect of Nikki Haley, former South Carolina governor, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., being a candidate in 2024 was raised, and Sonny Hostin had this to say in response to the potential Nikki Haley candidacy.
I'd love to see Nikki Haley.
And Nikki Haley the chameleon.
I think that Nikki Haley was incredibly effective governor of South Carolina.
What is her real name again? There are some of us that can be chameleons and decide not to embrace our ethnicity so that we can pass.
Sonny, I don't think that's fair.
You go by a different name.
Yeah, Sonny Hostin, that's a made-up name. She goes by a different name.
Nikki Haley was on with Harris Faulkner on Fox yesterday to respond to she's a chameleon, she doesn't embrace her heritage.
You know, it's not the first time, and it won't be the last time that the hosts at The View come after me, or that liberals come after me in whatever way. They can't stand the fact that a minority female would be a conservative Republican. You know, when I ran for, when I ran and won governor, a reporter went to a high-ranking African-American Democrat female and said, how do you feel that South Carolina now has their first minority governor? And she said, Nikki Haley's not a minority. She's just a conservative with a tan. So you look at what Sonny Hostin's does, and, you know, the idea that, no, Sonny is not her name. Nikki is my name. It is on my birth certificate. It is an Indian name, and I embrace my Indian heritage. I have written two books that describe the struggles that my family had, what it was like growing up. But the idea that they can do this, you're not going to see her fired from that show. We're not even going to see an apology from that show, because they let liberals say that about conservative Republican minorities all the time. But yet nothing is done. Had this been said about a Democrat?
Yeah, it would have been.
It would have been blown up out of.
Yeah, exactly.
A block news in every segment.
Interesting irony here. My real name is Sonny with a U.
Oh, that's your name?
Yeah, that's my real name. That's interesting, yeah.
Is it Daniel on your birth certificate?
Do we get sick of this? Are we sick of this yet? This idea that if you're a conservative and you're not a honky, that you're not a legitimate person of Indian descent in the case of Nikki Haley, or African descent, or whatever, Latino, Central America, South America, Mexico, wherever. Are you getting sick of this already? How much sillier does this need to get before you make the left stop this by throwing them out of office? For more on this and other topics, pleased to be joined by our friend Selena Zito, national political reporter, author of The Great Revolt, Inside the Populist Coalition, Reshaping American Politics. You can always check out her work at SelenaZito.com, SelenaZito.com. Selena, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Morning. So, you know, I know this is center cut from the Democrat Party's playbook, but this, I don't know if this identitarian stuff by race or gender identity, ethnicity, so on and so forth, I don't know if it has the currency it once did. There's actually a good piece by our friend Will Riley, who's a poli-sci professor at Kentucky State, historically black college, about the Spiked Online, Requiem for Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter has sort of gone away despite all the corporate money that was funneled their way out of guilt or whatever. Because of their own sort of mismanagement, and you can only paper over the mismanagement and malfeasance with identitarian politics for so long. Do you get a sense that maybe the ground is shifting under the left with respect to things like the Nikki Haley comments?
Well, we would love to think so. And I think all of these types of things, these tropes that are used, eventually become either full circle and or they just fade away. In fact, I just interviewed Nikki Haley on the road. People can check it out at SelenaZio.com. When it first started happening, and I would suspect that was about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, it got attention and people started like, whoa, you know, well, think about this. But as it became a caricature of attack, right, rather than anything with any meat on its bones, it has lost favor with people being curious about making statements like that. And it has become more of a joke to people, even people that don't share, you know, the maybe Nikki Haley's worldview, right? Maybe they're a Democrat and they're sitting there thinking, well, you know, I don't like Nikki Haley for this, this, and this. However, not liking her has anything to do with her name. And we need to stop the silly season. I think what people are getting tired of are things like this. These are meaningless criticisms.
Yeah. Oh, right. And speaking of criticism, a lot of people are, you know, wondering what's going on with John Fetterman. You're there in Pennsylvania. You're on the ground with him. What is it like covering him? And is he going to actually debate Dr. Oz?
So this has been an incredibly challenging race to cover. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman had a stroke in May. There was very, you know, and everyone, look, everyone has health issues, right? Or has someone in their family that has health issues. But this is a six-year commitment. And what has been missing, if you win the Senate race, what has been missing has been anything meaningful or anything at all, any transparency on the state of his health. He not only had a stroke, he also had a pacemaker placed in. So what we don't know in our state is the depth of the impact the stroke has had on him, on his mental facilities, but also the seriousness and longevity the pacemaker had on his heart. And, you know, this state has a great history of elected officials having had medical issues, both Republicans and Democrats. Arlen Specter had a brain aneurysm. He had Hodgkin's disease twice, and he had triple bypass. And he would come out with doctors, and they would answer reporters' questions. Our governor, our sitting governor, Bob Casey, in the 90s, he had a liver and heart transplant. And he provided his medical team as well as with his medical doctors to keep the public and the press updated on the seriousness of his medical issues. We have had nothing, zero, from John Fetterman, and that is not fair to the voters.
Yeah, I mean, even more recently, Larry Hogan in Maryland, when he had that bout with cancer, I mean, the same thing in terms of transparency and disclosing and talking through the you know, where he was at with the treatment and when he went into remission, thankfully, and so on and so forth. But that, yeah, that is required because nobody wants anybody to be sick or much less debilitated. But
I never knew he had a pacemaker put in.
Yeah, but you have to
on primary election day, he had a pacemaker put in.
But you have to convey that you're able to do the job. That's not unfair.
Right. This is the most deliberate body in the country. It requires communication. It also it requires stamina. And so we don't know the impact that either of these things. I mean, people keep talking about the stroke. Yeah, the heart's kind of important too.
Yeah.
And I can remember, you know, Dick Cheney was, and I don't mean to minimize his position, but he was only the vice president.
Right.
And yet we were completely updated on everything.
Right.
So is he easily accessible is he doing like what Biden did and campaign from his house and not really go out in public?
And is it his house or does he still live with mom and dad? I can't remember.
So, yeah, that's the other challenge with John Fetterman. There have been these really great sort of glossy stories written about him, largely centered on what he looks like. He's 6'8", he has tattoos, and he doesn't dress conventionally. He wears Carhartt sweat hoodies.
Oh, no.
I've seen that routine.
And cargo shorts. I mean, that's his uniform. So The Atlantic, New York Post, I mean, The New York Times, Washington Post, Rolling Stone, Playboy have all come in and done these like great big think pieces based on what he looks like and where he lives. However, the entire time he was mayor of Braddock, his parents paid for his salary. I mean, the salary for mayor of Braddock for a year is $150. And he has three children. So his parents, who are very wealthy, paid for his salary, which was not disclosed. They also paid for his kids' tuition. The kids don't go to school in the neighborhood school. They go to a very pricey private school. And in the city of Braddock, he didn't save it. Crime went up. A population declined. The businesses left. That's not saving a town.
It's just the myth. I know the myth creation around all this stuff. No, I know. I've been reading your reporting and others about this, and it's remarkable what this guy's getting away with. I wonder if he would consent to have Dr. Oz give him a checkup. Maybe that would
be good.
Then we could. If Dr. Oz clears him, then I'm fine with it. How's that? Speaking of Oz, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I think it's just interesting that when you're a doctor, you take emotion and out of it. So I'm sure, and he is a heart surgeon,
yeah.
So he would probably be able to assess the situation. But,
yeah.
You know, as a
yeah.
doctor, you also can't assess from afar.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of Oz, just on this race, because it can be sort of a bellwether. Where's his, he's got his own challenges, and there's a lot of conservatives like me who are a little queasy about him in the primary, despite Trump's endorsement. Where's his campaign? How's his campaign faring, taking advantage of, this and trying to puncture this myth creation surrounding Fetterman?
Well, see, as a reporter, it's been very frustrating watching other people report on this because there's been no other reporters out there with him up until recently. I was the only one driving across the state with him. This guy has gone to almost all 67 counties. He holds little events, he holds to big events. He sits down and talks with people, and he's very good at it. And he's doing the things that you're supposed to do in a state like Pennsylvania. You let people kick the tires. You show up in their county. You find out what the issues are. And that's what he's been doing for 4 months. But, John Fetterman sneezes, and there's 62 reporters at the event.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the focus has been on John Fetterman this, John Fetterman that, and or if he tweets and or if he's on Facebook, where I think that Oz is doing the more important work, the one that voters value, is getting to know them, getting to understand them where they are, rather than sitting in front of a keyboard and listening to their concerns. I think it has developed him into a very good politician, not in the traditional sense where you think of someone isolated, and not understanding people, but in the old-fashioned way where you're down on the ground, you're in a most granular position, and you're learning how to be a good governing entity. Hmm. And to that point, I think he's become very, very good. Of course, you wouldn't know that because nobody's following him.
Mm-hmm.
Although George Will has a great column today. I saw him out in Springfield Township in Delaware County in Pennsylvania last week. And, he's the first national press person outside of me, although I never think of myself as a national press person because I live in Pennsylvania, that really gave an eye-opening look at the differences between the two men.
Now, you wrote an interesting piece about Scranton Joe that I left me nonplussed. Scranton Joe is for the Johnny Punch Clocks and the Sally House Coats. He's middle working class America, and you're telling me he's got a problem in Versailles. I don't understand. What's happening, Selena?
So there are several towns in this country called Versailles, even though they're spelled the same as Versailles, the palace in France.
Yeah.
They're in Indiana, they're in Ohio, they're in Pennsylvania, and they're in Kentucky, and I'm sure I'm missing other ones as well. But Joe Biden does not govern as though he is representing people from these places in Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana and across the Midwest and Appalachia. He governs as though he is in Versailles, which is an imagery of disconnect and just thinking of the people that they cover or that they govern as, you know, serfs. Case in point, last week when the Dow plunged almost 1,300 points, he's celebrating in the White House South Lawn with every Democrat the Inflation Reduction Act, which, first of all, doesn't reduce inflation, and second of all, inflation was the reason that the Dow was tumbling. He's just incredibly out of touch with people. I mean, people on average are paying an extra $400 a month for basic goods.
Yep.
Nothing frivolous, just basic goods. And that's the equivalent of some people's mortgages or a really nice car. And they're not getting more money in their paychecks. So they're working on a deficit, and this is truly impacting people.
We're going to notify the residents of Versailles, Illinois, because Illinois has one, too. Yes. Brown County.
Sorry, I didn't know there was a
No, it's all right. Brown County. It's actually like one of the most Republican counties in the state. So I think they've got the message. Selena Zito, national political reporter, even though she lives in Pennsylvania, author of The Great Revolt, Inside the Populist Coalition, Reshaping American Politics. Follow her work. Check out her reporting, including on that all-important Pennsylvania Senate race. SelenaZito.com. Selena, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Don't miss Freedom Summit Chicago on November 5th. Get your tickets today before they sell out. Go to FreedomSummitChicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Hey, what are you doing today at noon?
What do you want to do?
Got anything going?
You want to go to lunch?
I want to go to the call to action, Stop the Stereotype rally and press conference outside the Hancock building.
Let me guess, because Darren Bailey lives there now?
Right. Features Michael Flager. Father, in quotation marks, Michael Flager should have been defrocked years ago. Disgrace of the Catholic Church. Parents for Peace and Justice, Mothers on a Mission, Concerned Citizens for a blah, 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 all these other sort of astroturfing groups that just run around calling people racist with whom they disagree. Demand an end to the profiling ads endorsing GOP Illinois Governor Darren Bailey. Yeah. Yeah.
No way.
I'm sorry I can't attend, Father Flager, but you're welcome to come on the show and repeat your histrionics that will be offered at the Hancock building. You can come on the show and try it with me if you'd like, since I'm responsible for the ads that you're talking about. So
A press they're protesting your ads.
Street press conference. Yeah. Street press conference. Street action. Call to action, man.
You get your signs ready now. Mm-hmm. We still have time.
You know, it's funny.
I might have to go to that.
There's a lot more white supremacists than you might think in Illinois, it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they comprise the Kankakee Daily Journal editorial board. Who would have thunk? Did you know the Kankakee Daily Journal was a white supremacist propaganda sheet? I didn't.
I didn't know.
I didn't find out until yesterday when they published an editorial, "The Safety Act Isn't Very Safe." The new law takes away the ability of prosecutors and judges to detain people whom they judge pose a threat. We side with Roe and Glasgow. That would be Jim Roe, the Kankakee County State's Attorney. Jim Glasgow, the Will County State's Attorney. As the Safety Act isn't good for the safety and well-being of every Illinoisan. What?
Mm-hmm.
Racism. Right?
Sound the alarm.
Isn't that the charge? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. I got more racism for you. It's not just coming from me anymore. Kankakee Daily Journal. I mean, it's probably my fault. I've provided the platform and opportunity for closet racists like the Kankakee Daily Journal editorial board to come out and show us who they are, right? Mm-hmm. Beverly Miles ran against J.B. Pritzker in the primary. Beverly Miles is a West Side resident. She is a retired Army major. She is a nurse. She ran against him.
Yeah, and she didn't do, I mean, considering she had zero funds in her campaign coffers, she got 9%. I wanted her to get double digits, but
she has
more votes than Pritzker probably thought she'd get.
She is featured in a new TV ad, produced and paid for by my PAC that's on this morning. Beverly Miles is a black woman, and apparently she is also a racist like me, because here's what she has to say about our governor.
As retired military, the words duty and honor means everything to me. Those values mean nothing to Governor Pritzker, who tried to get me fired from my job as a nurse. People like me and you need to stand up to J.B. Pritzker, mafia politics. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I believe in serving others. We are less safe in our neighborhoods. Our tax burdens are up. Our job opportunities are down. We put Pritzker in office. He failed us.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Feel free to call in and decry the racism of Beverly Miles, of the Kankakee Daily Journal, of two dozen Democrat state's attorneys who oppose the lawlessness that the Safety Act will unleash. Feel free.
Did that ad get under Pritzker's skin?
I think so. He responded saying it's false. Well,
what's false about it? Tell me more.
Well, Beverly Miles, this was Mark Kunkel who did an interview.
City of Chicago should play hard, work hard.
Horrible Mark Kunkel impersonation.
That's what he did. That's what he did.
We work hard, play hard.
When he voiced that hagiographic nonsense produced by Robert Redford for Tiny Dancer and CNN. That aired on CNN.
City works hard, play hard.
Like a bulldog.
I love
so
Mark
ridiculous.
Kunkel.
But I will give him credit for some of his recent journalistic offerings, including this interview he did with Bev Miles after the primary election, in which she said that she was told to either get out of the race or quit her job as a nurse. And she said, you know, this is coming from obviously from higher up. And this is the claim that she repeats in that ad.
He tried to get her fired.
You think that's beyond the beyond possibility, or is that completely believable given the political culture in this city and state, and the idea that she was going to defeat him at the polling. How dare you run against me? How dare you?
Or I'll take away your livelihood.
Yeah.
Conform or die.
Get her out
of
the race.
Not the first time.
Especially, I mean, he doesn't want to be challenged by a black woman.
Oh. That doesn't look good for his reputation.
Because he doesn't want to have to be critical of a black woman and risk angering, you know, the enough black voters to put his reelection in jeopardy, which he's done already by his policies.
I can't wait someday to tell you the story of what the Democrats are doing to me. They'll get you. Trust me. Or they'll try to. They'll make up things. They'll call hotline numbers, report erroneous things to make your life hell.
Well, of course they will. Of course they will.
And it's not going to go away.
And by the way, on this topic, on the substance of it, in addition to the politics of it, Cass has a good piece this week at johncassnews.com. Will the Safety Act give Chicago its own axe-wielding madman like that guy in New York? He makes the argument that, of course, this is going to negatively impact minorities disproportionately, because minority families disproportionately live in neighborhoods in Chicago and communities around the state that are most impacted by violence. That's just a fact. It shouldn't be that way. It is that way. I'm describing what is, not what should be. And will the Safety Act give Chicago its own axe-wielding madman like that guy in New York?
I just watched that video. Are you kidding me?
That was
disgusting. And scary.
Right.
And he's out on bond.
What do you mean will? What do you mean will, though? Will it give? It happens every day.
Yeah.
And that guy just, you know, assaulted some people and scared the hell out of them by, you know, wielding an axe around and breaking things with it. Thankfully, he didn't hurt anybody. Every day that happens in Cook County. Michael in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to let you guys know I'm making my sign for the rally today. Kankakee's always been racist. If everybody knows if you remove the vowels in the end, it does spell KKK.
Exactly. Yeah, you've decoded it. Yeah, it's a dog whistle, the town's name. Very good, Michael. Oh, that's right. That's right. It's terrible, isn't it? The scourge.
Are anti-protesters going to be at this protest?
You know, it's funny.
Today at noon outside the Hancock building.
I was talking to a ATF agent who was in California and I was in Milwaukee. And we're talking about this whole, like, you know, white supremacists, the domestic terrorist threat that white supremacy poses and so on and so forth. And I'm like, so what do you do? Is like 90% of what you do interdicting, you know, gun running and so forth? Is it to deal with street gangs? He's like, yeah, more than that. It's like, what about this, all this domestic terrorist stuff you hear from the Department of Justice and from politicians in this state, like Pritzker and Lightfoot? He's like, I would bring cases in California, and they'd be like, we're really focused on the, you know, white supremacist threat. He's like, well, I don't have any identifiable white supremacist threat, so... what I have is street gangs that are responsible for actual violence that are running guns and other things that you are on TV and everywhere saying you're trying to stop, the illegal guns on the streets and so on and so forth. But he's like, in my time as an ATF agent, I haven't come across. I mean, do white supremacists exist? Yeah. Have we seen violence from people that are, you know, Aryan Nation type people and so on and so forth? Yes, of course. The violence comes on a lot of different flavors and from a lot of different directions. But in terms of like rank order priority of threats, he's just like, this is a joke. This is a joke. What you hear, this preening, this racial preening by political hacks like Pritzker and Lightfoot, Merrick Garland, the entire Biden regime. John in McHenry County.
Hi, just wanted to suggest maybe because Governor Pritzker just called on Senator Emil Jones III to resign, is Governor Pritzker considered racist now?
Right, yeah. Thanks for the call, John. Emil Jones III.
Taking money from red light camera companies.
Alleged, yeah. Alleged. Taking, taking bribes in exchange for legislative action. He's under indictment, but he's not been convicted yet. Exactly.
Alderman, he's not going to resign.
Exactly. Hey.
Keep pushing the trial down.
This is just, you know, preening by Pritzker, of course it is, to pretend like, you know, these things are just an affront to good government in this state and so on and so forth. How about getting rid of the red light cameras? What about that? Anybody want to focus on the actual underlying issue? Since Emil Jones was attempting to cook the studies about the safety impact of red light cameras, how about getting rid of this backdoor tax that disproportionately hits lower income people, thus disproportionately minorities? How about getting rid of them altogether? Or I'd even start get rid of all the red light cameras in the majority minority wards in the city. Raise your hand if you want to do that, Governor. Grant in Rockford.
Good morning, you guys. Great show as always. I guess we're all racist now, but, you know, Pritzker's wife, she's black, and she's a major player in the Obama campaign. I just wonder how much
Pritzker's
wife
has.
Is from South Dakota.
Pritzker's lieutenant governor, you mean?
Yes, my apologies. Yeah. Yes.
He and Juliana Stratton, not married.
Not married.
Yeah, not married.
Keep those ads coming, Dan. They're powerful, and I see them on Hulu and everything, and I hear people saying, wow, I had no idea. Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you, sir. Lee and Hammond.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, this, you know, why is it that these Democrats have this love affair with criminals? Why, the racists are the ones that say that black and brown people are incapable of obeying the law. And Kim Fox goes to county jail and tells the inmates she's got more in common with them than anybody on the outside. Yeah. Why does she not go to an ICU and see the black and brown victims in these ICUs due to the street violence in the city of Chicago? Instead, she goes to the county jail where the very people she's supposed to be prosecuting and tells them, I'm in your corner, guys. I mean, how, you know, these Democrats are constantly trying to use this race card because they got nothing else. And the sad thing is the public, actually, so many of the people out here in the community buy this stuff. It's pretty sad.
Thanks for the call, Lee.
You need to go to that press conference at noon.
I got stuff to do.
Wouldn't it be funny if you just walked by or had a question for him? I don't even know if they know what you look like.
Mm. I know what that Archie cartoon character Flagger looks like. I've had a run-in before with him on the street. I mean, not like a run-in, just saying, oh, you're Father Flagger. Hi, my name's Dan Proft. You're a disgrace to the Catholic Church. You should be defrocked. That was the extent of our exchange.
Mm-hmm. Did he respond at all?
No, he had a bunch of people around him that, like, get in between us because he thought that, you know, Father Flagger, you know, that their personal Jesus need to be protected. You know, they're flim-flamming scam artist. Willie Wilson, I wanted to get to this, too. The Willie Wilsonization of politics, and this was a piece that Laura Washington wrote in the Tribune last month. But the timeliness of it is the assertion as Willie's campaigning for mayor, and as you see what Laura Washington said was coming, actually now happening, and that's the public purse being opened up to provide those property tax, income tax rebates, again, permanent tax increases in the thousands for temporary relief in the hundreds. That's the Pritzker offer. That's some offer. Lightfoot is doing the same thing with all the federal funny money that accrued to the city. Lord Washington, to her credit, noting this, Lightfoot running for reelection with a seemingly bottomless gift bag of giveaways from gas cars to Ventra cars, bicycles, locks, helmets, to more than $1,000 per household and rebates to defray the cost of security cameras and so on and so forth, not to mention her little pilot universal basic income program, all the giveaways. But she throws Willie Wilson into this, and I want to separate Willie Wilson from people who use other people's money to try to buy votes. Willie Wilson, as he said on our show, has been giving away money through his foundation to people in need in the city for decades before he was ever a candidate for office. And if he continues to do so when he's a candidate for office, that's consistent with who he is, and it's his money. Pritzker and Lightfoot are generous with other people's money only when it's time for them to stand for election. So the headline is misleading in terms of the content of Washington's column, Beware of the Willie Wilsonization of Politics. Willie, it's not the Willie Wilsonization of politics that's the problem. It's the Pritzkerization. It's the Lightfootization of politics. It's the distributing of other people's resources, our resources, to particular groups, whether by income or race or region, for a specific purpose as they're focused on weighing a decision on that person for continued existence in public office. That's not what Willie Wilson has done, and therefore he has the standing to continue to do it. You don't have to be somebody else when you run for office. In point of fact, you should be who you've been for your entire adult life, and that's what Willie Wilson is doing, and he deserves a defense.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Before we move on, I want to claw back to the topic we were speaking about at the end of the 7 o'clock hour with this whole issue of the rebate checks from Pritzker and the distribution of cash, you know, that was funneled from the feds, the Fed COVID funny money by Lightfoot, the timing as they're standing for reelection. Anita on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My husband and I have been talking about this, and we decided when we get the bribe money from Pritzker, we're going to roll it right into Darren Bailey's campaign.
I love it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much,
Anita. First-time caller, yeah.
I like that, yeah. With the bribe money from Pritzker, roll it into the Bailey campaign. That's a higher, better use for it. I like it.
Have you gotten your rebate yet? Your tax rebate?
I don't
check
think
your
I...
bank statements. They're coming this week.
I don't. I don't think I qualify.
I got $100 for...
You got $100?
Well, for my kid.
You did? Already?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm waiting for property.
Did you roll it into the Darren Bailey campaign?
You know,
Anita,
I was just
going to...
Where's my checkbook?
All right. Good. I wanted to... this is a sort of a fun story. We're expecting to hear from Chicago Bears Hall of Famer. The Bears.
Bears.
Brian Urlacher. You remember him?
Yeah.
He played linebacker.
I see him more than my mother because I take the Jane Addams and I see his picture everywhere.
Oh, yeah. No, he still has a presence in Chicago. And I
still
think
every billboard is his billboard.
Yeah, and he comes back to play golf and stuff. You know, we get great golf in the summer as opposed to in the winter when it's not so great. But, yeah, obviously.
I love winter golf in Chicago. It's very challenging to find the ball.
Anyway, I'm wondering if he may do something like what the person that one of your sons is named after did.
Uh-huh.
This is a walk-on tryouts at Penn State University for the football program this fall. And there was one guy who came to the walkouts who believed he had a little bit of eligibility left. And even though he had sort of aged out of the college demographic, still had something to give, still loved the game, throw the pigskin around. Here's how that went.
All right, here we go, Chad. Chad's going to run. Chad, run fast. Fast Chad. I like that. Fast Chad. Think fast, run fast, right? This flow might slow me down, too.
Yeah,
it's good, though.
Let's go, Chad.
Here you go, baby.
Running the 40.
Think fast, run fast. Think fast, run fast. Fast Chad. Fast Chad. You said it, Ferris. This is for you, baby. Think fast, run fast. Think fast, run fast.
Third time.
549.
549.
549? When's the last team you played on?
I was homeschooled, so I never played ball.
Really?
Pick up ball. Watch a lot of film, though.
Love that.
My mom was my coach.
Mom was what?
Mom was my coach.
Like Tim Tebow.
And my teacher.
You get good grades?
No.
Tough teacher?
She wasn't very smart. She was a good coach, though.
Yeah, that's Chad
that's
Powers.
So
Chad Powers trying out for the Penn State football team. And then it was time for Coach to announce who, if any, of the walk-on tryouts made the team. And that's how this is how that went.
The other thing I got good news for you, I did some background check, and one of the guys that you guys are competing with has kind of been disqualified for two reasons. Number one, his testing numbers were awful. He ran 5.49 in the 40, broad jump 7'10". Not what we're looking for, but on top of that, we found out that he's ineligible. He has no eligibility left. Chad Powers, you're ineligible. Come on up.
Does that mean I didn't make the team, Coach?
No, you did not.
Oh man! I thought I had it, boys. But, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just a 41-year-old just wants to play ball, man. I'm just trying to get back.
And they takes
there
off his wig.
Play some ball.
They youth.
We had you on, right?
So, of course, the reveal is that it was Eli Manning.
Yeah.
And
that Chad Power.
If you haven't seen it, it's awesome. A great video. And, you know, Eli and Peyton, I mean, they're funny guys, especially together. But Eli's got a great sense of humor. And I love that the Penn State went along with it. Maybe Pat Fitzgerald over at Northwestern could do the same thing and bring in Urlacher to try out for linebacker. I mean, we just lost to a 1AA team. SIU. So, you know, something to inspire the guys. I don't know.
Pretty tough loss there.
Well, we're pleased to be joined now by Brian Urlacher, Hall of Fame linebacker for the Chicago Bears. Of course, everybody knows who Brian Urlacher is. And here to talk a little bit of policy, not just a little bit of football. Brian Urlacher, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that was a great, by the way, that video Eli did was awesome.
Wasn't it awesome?
I was laughing. I watched it yesterday. I was dying laughing. Those kids were like, who is this guy?
Chad Powers with the mullet.
I love where he said there might be something to this Chad Powers.
Yeah.
He looked like he was like 55 years old.
it was great.
You're a freshman?
5'4", 940. Yeah, that was.
You're a freshman? Ineligible. Coach Pranger did a good job, too. That was funny.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good to have a little fun. You recently, and you posted this on your Instagram account, took a trip to the southern border to look at the humanitarian crisis that's taking place, get a first-person look at it, talk to Border Patrol agents. Tell us what you saw.
It was really eye-opening. You know, I had someone reach out to me and asked if I want to take a trip down there. I was like, I'd love to go. And it's only 3 hours from where I live as well. So I went down there with Nick Lowry. I'm not sure if you know that Nick was a kicker for the Chiefs for a long time.
Yeah.
And the main goal was just to kind of see what was going on and kind of interact with the agents because morale is so low because of what they're dealing with. But it ended up being, I mean, the agents were unbelievable. We got to go on some boats and go on the Colorado River there and see. We saw four guys crossing in the middle of the day, just walking across our border like they all do because there's no policy that says they can't. And then they got picked up by our Border Patrol. It takes an hour to process them so they're not in the field doing their job. Got to play with some of the slams. Go on some of the, like, they have a dune buggy that they take out at night to find people in the desert, got to ride on that. And just basically hang out and talk to the agents. It was to hear some stories, some terrible stories. It was really sad just to hear what these guys are going through.
Well, what are some other hardships that they're facing?
Well, so say they're at the wall and they find a child who's 2 years old sitting by the wall with a stick, a pin on them that says, here's my number. Take me to this address or call this number to have me picked up. That happens every day to them. They these kids come across unaccompanied, and they have to deal with them. They have to, they don't have to, but humanitarianly, I think that's the right thing to do. So they take them, they process them, and someone's assigned to get that child to the number that where it's at or somewhere safe where they can be taken care of. Just the things that are going on the other side of the border before the people get across, the little girls that are raped on right across our border, just there's obviously the drugs and fentanyl and the trafficking, but there's just a lot of other things going on too. They find dead bodies almost every day. And that's just in Yuma, right? We're down the street from my house. I can't imagine what's going on at the bigger border crossing.
Yeah. And you mentioned the morale is low, and I assume, but please, feel free to expound on this, that it's because to some extent they feel overwhelmed and or powerless to, to provide security for the American people, to help people that are otherwise, nice people, good people, want a better life, unaccompanied kids. And with this, the way things are set up, they can't really affect much of either.
Well, they can't do their jobs. You know, they're trained to be Border Patrol agents, and they're more like caretakers, or processors. You know, they're processing. The day I got down there, there was 600 crossings before 9 a.m., and then when I got there at 11, we saw four more guys, 18 to 25-year-old males from Venezuela, came across at 11 o'clock in the morning. And they literally walk across. Some people think that's not possible, but they do just walk across, and then they get processed, and then they get really added to their health for a little bit. There was 1,800 migrants in the facility I was at. And then they get released, for their quote-unquote court date that they have to go to. They just can't do their job. I think they're frustrated. They think people think that they're not doing their job, and it's not their job. It's the policy. They're just following the policies that were put in place by the administration.
Did you talk to them at all or hear any feedback about as terms of their opinions about what Governors Abbott and DeSantis have been doing with respect to
They don't comment a lot on politics. I mean, they have a job to do, and they follow the policies that are put in place for them. If the policies were different, they would do different. But they're kind of handcuffed with what they can do right now with as many people are coming over. So they don't. There's not a lot of comments on what they should be doing, but it's just what they're supposed to do and what the policy says for them to do.
Yeah, are some of them afraid to do their job, considering those four Border Patrol agents who were put on desk duty because they claimed, the left media claimed, that they were whipping Haitians, and they weren't. They were riding their horses.
Yeah. I saw those videos as well. Yeah, they are. You said exactly right. They are a little afraid when they encounter people, you know, because they obviously people, some of them have weapons as well. They've encountered weapons, guns. Mm-hmm. So when they have to be really careful, but they also have to be careful how they handle them, right? Because, you know, everyone knows they're going to be watching now and what they're going to be, you know, they can't do their job to their full extent because they're scared that they may do something wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
not wrong, but that may be portrayed as wrong.
Yeah, right. I mean,
yes,
it's
wrongfully accused.
I mean, it's the what's happening at the border sounds like what's happening in so many major cities with local law enforcement. Yeah. You know, right? I mean, it's the same dynamic. It sounds like
it really is. It's happening everywhere. Not in it's leaking over, and you know, so Yuma, Arizona has 100,000 people in it. This year alone, we're going to get so far to date, 300,000 people coming across the border. And that's just that doesn't count the gotaways. There's got to be over 100,000 gotaways as well. You know, they set up, they'll send two people across at one spot and sneak 10 over another place when they know those two people are getting processed by our Border Patrol agents. So they have ways to get people in, but 300,000 people that they've accounted for at one crossing when the population is 100,000 people. That doesn't seem right.
It's insane. So you said you're in a facility with 1,800 people. Are they shipping those people? Any places, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I don't know where they. I didn't ask. Honestly, they do send. They send them out, you know, to be processed. Or once they're processed, they send them out to other facilities. I have no idea where that may be. I didn't ask Chief Clem when I was down there. But there's, you know, they're held in the cages that were built under the Obama Biden administration, the same ones, you know, that have been there for a while.
Mm-hmm. But do they seem?
You know, I'm sorry. Those are the Trump cages. I'm sorry. What was I thinking?
Yeah, come on, Brian. Get it right.
The Obama cages have been moved to Martha's Vineyard, the Obama cages.
Yeah. Oh, they got 50 in their backyard. That didn't go over too well.
Yeah. So, I know. Surprise.
They were gone pretty quick, though, you know? It's too bad the rest of the country can't handle them that way.
I know. With all we, you know, step up, do your part. They couldn't even handle 50. So the
they
people
couldn't.
That you see.
You know what?
Oh.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The people that you say, do you talk to any of these people that are coming over with a translator or? Are they relieved when they get to American land?
And most of the people are trying to get out of a bad situation. I totally understand it. And there's ways to come here legally. You know, I have a lot of families and people I know that came here the right way legally. But then there's a lot of, you hear these stories about the Venezuelan jails emptying their inmates at our border.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure they're not the only ones. So there's a lot of that going on. They get to our border. They literally fly to Mexico City, take a bus or a train to Mexicali and walk 100 yards across the border and they're in the United States.
Wow.
That's how easy it is. There are some, obviously, people who walk across the desert for a few days with the traffickers, but the cartels are making so much money off of people paying them to get across the border that, you know, it's easy money right now because it's open. They can come whenever they want.
Since you're down there in Yuma, what do you hear from, you know, your neighbors in conversation? What are local authorities attempting to do best they can to deal with this?
Well, you know, they could finish building the wall. They have everything. Like, you go down there and you see all the supplies needed to finish the wall. They have everything sitting right there, but they can't finish it. But it wouldn't matter at this point if it was done anyway because of the policy that anyone can come through. You know, right. Wherever there's a gap, they just walk up there and they walk across, they swim across. So it doesn't matter if the wall was done or not. It's all about it didn't matter when Trump was in either because it was all about the policies.
Yeah.
You know, the wall can be 80 feet high and no gaps, but if there's the policies that you can come in, you're going to come in.
Yeah, that's why a lot of them are going to Eagle Pass, Texas, because there's no wall there and there's a huge gap, so they're just flooding in. And I used to live in El Paso, and I'd be with Border Patrol agent with night vision goggles, and the moms that come across, the pregnant women, just to give birth is unbelievable. Did you see any pregnant women when you were there or young kids?
We did, yeah. There was quite a bit. And, you know, the weird thing was the women were wearing a lot. There were some women that were nicely dressed. They were wearing high heels because they didn't walk across. Well, they walked 100 yards to get across the border.
Oh.
You know, they fly from Venezuela and wherever they came from, and they just walk. They drop them right there at the border. They pay, you know, $5,000, $10,000 to get dropped off there, and they walk across and they get detained, and they're good to go. They're in the United States.
Well, maybe Border Patrol could enlist like you and Lance Briggs just to stand there where they're crossing and intimidate them to go backwards. What do you think?
I mean, if those Border Patrol agents don't intimidate them, we're not going to do anything. I'll tell you that much. Those guys are good at their job and their stuff, and they're really having a hard time right now. It's too bad what they're going through and encountering every day.
So I got to ask you a Bears question. What do you think about the Bears moving to Arlington Heights?
Well, the first game was awesome. Obviously, you know, they beat up San Fran in that crappy weather. I was in town that weekend. But last weekend, I wasn't shocked about the game last week. It's the Packers, and it's Aaron Rodgers. They're good.
Yeah.
You know, especially at home. They come off a loss on the road. They come home. You know they're going to play well. So I wouldn't be too down on the Bears right now. Bears have definitely a winnable game this weekend with Houston coming in. Lovey's coming back. It would be a nice 43-4
there. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, but are you going to be at the ribbon cutting for Bears World in Arlington Heights when that happens?
I don't think so.
No?
I was not too enthused. I understand the move. You know, I just think of the Bears always playing in Soldier Field, though. So it's kind of, it's different for me to think of them going somewhere else, especially in a dome, if they do happen to build a dome.
Yeah.
That takes away their home field advantage right there.
Yeah. And if they can protect him, do you think Justin Fields could be a game changer at quarterback for the Bears?
He's got some talent. You know, you look at the way he throws the football well. Obviously, he's athletic. He can move around. You said it. Get some talent around him and get him some protection. I think he's got a chance to be pretty good.
All right. Now that you're a retired Hall of Famer, how's the golf game? Because I know you come back here to play golf. I've heard that through the grapevine.
I'm actually here right now. I'm going to Shore Acres right now to play golf.
Shore Acres. Right. Seth Rainer's crown jewel. Very good.
That place was phenomenal. Played at Butler yesterday. Another fun, hard course. But, yeah, so when we come back here, this time of year is my favorite time of year here. So try and get as many rounds as I can when I'm here.
Must be nice to be a retired Hall of Famer. Butler, Shore Acres.
Listen,
you know.
Be nice.
Yeah, that's all right. We're not jealous.
Brian Urlacher, Hall of Famer, Chicago Bears. I think everybody's familiar with him. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Play well today.
Yes, thanks for having me. See you.
Hit him long and straight. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Don't miss Freedom Summit Chicago on November 5th. Get your tickets today before they sell out. Go to freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The Cook County Pan Jan Drums not really interested in keeping violent criminals behind bars, but they are interested in keeping masks on people's faces.
Yeah, we got this memo that was handed to all judges in Cook County. As they've done throughout the COVID-19 pandemic this week, my staff consulted with Dr. Rachel Rubin, you know, Cook County Department of Public Health.
This is from Tim Evans.
Yeah, Tim Evans, yes, chief judge to all the judges. Dr. Rubin continues to recommend that masking in all of our court facilities. She indicates that relaxing the policy might be warranted, but we are anticipating a surge in COVID infections soon over the winter months. So mask up, they are doing now.
Okay.
Cook County.
All right. Mask up. Don't worry, though. If you're charged with something, you'll be able to take the mask off when you take a walk outside because you're not going to be held, generally speaking. Speaking of masking, some good news on the good news front here, particularly with schools. Federal district court judge in Louisiana yesterday ruled the federal government cannot require Head Start program teachers, staff, and volunteers to be vaccinated, nor can it require adults or students to wear masks. Permanently enjoins the vaccine and mask mandates in the 24 states covered by those who filed this complaint. This the plaintiffs represented by the Liberty Justice Center impacts 280,000 teachers, staff, and volunteers. So there is some pushback. And then, again, with respect to masks, just another study to throw onto the pile. I know this will have no impact on the dyed-in-the-wool COVIDians, but
yeah, like my church.
If you fashion yourself somebody interested in data and science, then I guess you have to explain how you can just ignore all the data and the science. Use of face masks in classrooms made, quote, no significant difference, unquote, in COVID-19 infection rates, according to a new study done by researchers from several universities and hospitals in Spain, looking at COVID transmission rates, age, and mandated use of face masks in classrooms across the region of Catalonia. no significant difference in stopping COVID spread. This latest study to add to dozens of other studies that we've profiled on this show. Carol Markowitz joins us now to discuss this and other matters. She's a columnist for the New York Post, contributing editor at The Spectator as well. Carol, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
So, you know, the pandemic is over, but there are some caveats depending on where you live.
Right. And that's really sad and pathetic in September of 2022.
That we're still doing this. Well, what's going on in New York? Because I know you're there. And when it comes to vaccinations.
She was
there.
I actually live in Florida now, but I was in New York last week. I visit a lot of family, and I still write for the New York Post. It is still kind of madness over there. Still a lot of masking outside. Still a lot of people very afraid. And the thing is that these people have been lied to, and it continues. This lie continues. So, for example, masks do not work. And it's like that should be a mainstream opinion because there's all this data showing that masks do not work. And yet that's still considered like a fringe thought. And it's not. It's absolutely not. And I think that people really need to realize how much damage was done with this misinformation that people believe masking works. You know, sometimes I'll see somebody masked in Florida and I'll be like, oh, look at that. Somebody's masking in Florida. And then I'll realize that they're like coughing because they have COVID and they think that their mask protects them out in the world and, or, you know, protects other people from catching their COVID in the world. And it's like, it's a scary thing that the health establishment lied to us the way that they did, but there's an avalanche of evidence that that's the case and people need to accept it.
Dan Henninger writes about the great migration that's occurring away from California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, and to the Sun Belt and and the South. The populations of San Francisco fell 6.3%, New York City 3.5%, Boston and Washington both 2.9% between July 2020 and July 2021. Your paper, The New York Post, reporting this week, 41,885 New Yorkers moved from New York to Florida just this year, and we see huge in movers in Florida, huge out movers in California, New York. You know the stats, but this great this great migration that's occurring now that the sort of pandemic powers are semi-permanent, this great migration is going to be permanent as well.
Yeah, people don't move back once they've picked up their lives and rearranged their whole life and moved their family away. I get asked a lot, like, would you come back, you know, when New York kind of settles down and normalizes a little bit? And my answer is absolutely not. I moved my three children, and that's it. We're here till, you know, the end. And I think people just don't understand how serious a move is for so many people and how it's not something that they do flippantly and then move back and that's it. I wrote my column. My column ran on Monday about the restrictions still going on in New York City and nationally also. Like, you still can't enter the U.S. with without a vaccine, which is absolutely bananas and actually contradicts CDC policy. CDC says don't differentiate now between vaccinated and unvaccinated because obviously vaccinated people can still spread COVID. But in New York City, kids could go to school unvaccinated and they could sit at lunch with their friends and they could play sports during gym, but they were not allowed to play sports after school in leagues organized by the schools. And that changed on Tuesday, the day after my column ran. There's so many things like that that need to change ASAP. Also this week, New York City lifted a private vaccine mandate. So private businesses were forced to have this vaccine mandate and they finally lifted it this week. But public employees still are under this vaccine mandate as they fire teachers and allegedly have a teacher shortage. It's chaos, and I don't see how anybody goes back to that.
So teachers, and what about firefighters and police officers? They still have a vaccine mandate.
Need to be vaccinated. Yep, that's right.
Although you had that case, the Brooklyn cop who won his case per his religious exemption, right?
So that's right.
So you have some court cases that are being ruled in favor of.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. We need these people now more than ever.
Yeah, and we need them, and they're feeling their absence. They are. Teachers and police officers, response times are much longer. This is affecting the city. And again, to just beat this point to death. They're literally not following CDC policy. So for 2 years, we were told we must follow everything the CDC says to the letter. We must. And now the CDC policy says don't differentiate between vaccinated and unvaccinated people. They're ignoring that completely.
What do you make of the movement now in the direction of discussing the possibility of the need for lockdowns because, well, you know, climate change? David Harsanyi noted in his piece in the Post, recent Nature Journal piece notes, COVID-19 lockdowns prepare people for personal carbon allowances. Restrictions on individual freedom that were unthinkable only 1 year before have us more prepared to accept the tracking and limitations to achieve a safer climate. Klaus Schwab and his ghouls at the World Economic Forum are making the same sort of noise, the possibility of locking down, limiting, you know, California, don't set your thermostat above 78 degrees. Spain is doing the same thing.
Don't charge your electric car.
Don't charge your electric. I mean, this is so, you know, again, these things seem unthinkable. They lock us down over climate change. That's right-wing hysteria. I mean, it's just what the left is saying.
But it's literally happening on, you know, smaller levels in places like California already. The thing is, and this is the kind of thing that the people who criticize the people who have migrated to the South during this time don't understand. They're saying, you know, and I've said it myself in the beginning of the pandemic. I said to friends of mine who wanted to leave New York, you know, in March, April, May 2020, I said, don't make permanent decisions for temporary problems. But what we've learned is this is not a temporary problem. This is not something that was going to go away in 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks. This is something that continues. Emergency powers continue in so many states to this day, and they can use that for whatever they want. And so the idea that we're going to have climate lockdowns is completely rational. It is an entirely rational fear that people living in places like California should have, and they should think about whether or not they trust their government not to do that. If I lived in California, there's no way I would trust Gavin Newsom not to lock us down when he felt like the climate needed some saving.
Oh, he'll do that.
In terms of the other problems that afflict New Yorkers and Chicagoans and Los Angelinos and many other residents of many other cities on a daily basis, like actual problems, like their personal safety, we had this very high profile incident in New York City with the Axeman at the McDonald's at the transit station. And he after threatening a dozen people, waving an axe around, breaking stuff, he took a walk because that's what New York City does.
That's right. And New York and Chicago are just in such a bad place where I think that they just become synonymous with crime, and that's become acceptable to, you know, the politicians that run these places. It's no longer even discussed how to stop this. I mean, after that axe story, did any politician who's actually in office say, this is what we need to do to stop this kind of behavior? This is what we need to focus on. These are the services we need to provide. These are the policing we need to have. They didn't say anything. They're not going to say anything. It's like they've completely left these cities to die. The McDonald's CEO saying that they're having trouble hiring in Chicago because of crime is something that CEOs should all be saying. They should all be saying that we are having trouble hiring because of crime, because we know that that's true. You know, I know Citadel left Chicago. I wrote a piece on that for Real Clear Florida because of crime, because, you know, their employees felt targeted and afraid, and they can't hire the best people like that. And these are going to be long-lasting problems that if these cities don't start to deal with now, will only spiral and get worse because we've seen it happen before.
Let me get your political handle on the impact of things like the Axeman incident, but what it's representative of, the lawlessness that you're describing. Because we have the same sort of dynamic here. People want to believe it's possible, but they're skeptical because they're so beaten down. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that Lee Zeldin can beat Kathy Hochul and it turns on the issue of crime in New York City?
It's possible. I don't think it happens, just because I don't think New York is bad enough yet. I think that a lot of people are still denying that things are very bad. And that's really, I always say this, but, you know, the difference between the New York that I grew up in the 80s and 90s, where things were bad, is that nobody was in denial about it. It wasn't like, you know, people weren't walking around saying, like, oh, crime isn't that bad. Look at this index. Look at this number. Like, this, it's just pretty good. We all accepted that it was bad. And whether or not, you know, it took him a while to get to the solution, which was voting in Rudy Giuliani and George Pataki as governor. But it was a consensus that things were bad. In New York right now, there's not that consensus. And a lot of people will say it's really not that bad. Look, it was worse in the 90s. And, you know, the answer to that, obviously, is we undid 30 years of policing overnight. And that is not going to be easy to fix. It's not going to be, yeah, it's not as bad as the 90s, but it can get much worse, and it probably will.
Yeah, I mean, just right. It could always be worse, so I'm going to stand pat with the people that are putting me in the position of saying the only compliment I can offer is it could always be worse. They could always make it worse. So let's see if they do it. Let's keep them in there to see if they make it worse, because we know they're not going to make it better. Yeah, it's fascinating logic. Carol Markowitz, columnist for the New York Post, contributing editor to The Spectator as well. Carol, thanks as always.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.